So I made the career change in 2011 to Skylight Financial. I had interviewed at quite a few different investment and financial planning firms, but I really liked Skylight Financial because they had this group that worked just with families with special needs. So we do financial planning with families who have children and adults with special needs and helping them understand what that really means from a planning aspect of just understanding Social Security, guardianship, trusts, waivers, the ABLE Act that just came out. So there's always changes. There's changes in the DD board. There's changes in all kinds of the resources that are available to our families. And so we try to stay updated on those to figure out how that's going to influence and impact the families that we work with. So the newest one to the table is this ABLE Act. So how many of you guys have heard of the ABLE Act? All right. The ABLE Act today, what we're going to talk about is I'll kind of go through the general gist of it. And then if we have time, we might actually go on to the actual website to show you how you would want to set up an account with the stable accounts. None of that is through me. All of the stable accounts in the ABLE Acts are done through Ohio. So it will be just a simple demonstration of how you yourself can go on and do that as well. But the ABLE Act was created because I'm sure as many of you know, if you have an adult with disabilities who's 18 years or older, if they have more than $2,000 of assets in their names, and so assets include things like savings accounts, 529 plans, whole life insurance that has cash value within it, or variable universal life insurance, or any kind of insurance product that has cash in it, any kind of investments, or anything that is registered to that child who is now turning 18, that can be seen as an asset to that child. So we have a lot of families that come to us and they say, oh, we have a 16-year-old, they're high-functioning autistic, and we've been saving into a 529 plan since they were a baby. Grandparents have been contributing, I've been contributing, so now this child has, you know, $14,000 in this 529 plan. But we're not sure if they're actually going to be using it. And so at that point, we have to kind of do some maneuvering or have more talks and developing a strategy, because if they do want to qualify for Medicaid and Social Security income when that child turns 18, they're either going to have to spend that down, or if it's in a 529 plan, they can actually change beneficiaries to somebody else, but then we're maneuvering around that so that they can qualify right away for their Social Security benefits. So this has always been an issue for many families, because adults that have the ability to earn income, adults that have the ability to work, and then families that want to give money to their kids, right, haven't been able to do so directly to the children. So they've been either giving to the family, the parents, they've been giving to maybe trusts, they've been giving in different ways, but we're never able to really give directly to that child or that adult. So the ABLE Act is called the Achieving a Better Life Experience Act. And the reason, again, it came about is because it allows adults who are 18 years or older, who have a disability that has been diagnosed prior to the age of 26, to now have assets that they can build in their name. So they can have a savings account and an investment account in their own name that will allow them to exceed that $2,000 that they were not allowed to have before. Does that make sense in regards to why it came about? So for me, when I'm working with families, I have a lot of families that come in, have children that are working or have children that they want to give or gift money to, and they have nowhere to do it. But now you could actually do this with the ABLE accounts that are out there. All right, any questions on those pieces? I want this to be more interactive, so as you guys come up with questions or have questions, let me know. So what happened was in 2014, the ABLE Act became federally mandated and said, okay, the federal government said, great, we can enact this ABLE Act, it's great. Well, the problem was is then they sent it down to the states to have to mandate and go through whether they were going to approve it or not approve it. So just because the federal government said we have the ABLE Act, it's available now they're just giving it to the state, so not every state has the ABLE Act. And Ohio just became ABLE certified in 2016. So they passed legislation to say that we can now hold ABLE accounts under the state of Ohio. So if you have friends or family who might be outside of Ohio, who live in a state that does not have an ABLE account, they can actually still open an ABLE account through the state of Ohio. They just pay a little bit more to do that. All right, so Achieving a Better Life Experience Act of 2014 was signed into law in December 2014, and then again in 2016, it was signed under the Ohio law. So what is really the ABLE account? It allows families to put money into an account. It is an investment account, all right, and we'll talk a little bit about the choices that you have there. But the money grows tax deferred. All right, so it's very similar, and it's actually almost exactly like a 529 college plan. So if you're familiar with those plans, it's after-tax money that goes into a bucket, and it gets invested or goes into a money market account. Anything that grows is tax-deferred, and when you take the money out for specific needs for that child or that adult, then it's tax-free. All right, so it's tax-free. So it works very much like a 529 plan, or you might be more familiar with a Roth IRA. So it has tax-free money coming out, right? And again, it's not included as income for those children or for those adults. So that way they can still get Social Security income, they can still make other income and put it into the ABLE account, or grandma and grandpa or mom and dad could put money into it for them to allow to have some more savings and growth in regards to investment. But again, it's not going to count them or disqualify them from Social Security income, right? And it's really help. It doesn't have anything to do with Medicaid. So even if you get the ABLE account, even if you're an SSI, you can still have an ABLE account. If you have a special needs trust already set up, you can still qualify. You can still contribute to an ABLE account as well. All right. So who is eligible? So anybody that has been diagnosed prior to the age of 26 with a disability is able to qualify for an ABLE account, okay? That's the first one. The second one is if you're already on SSDI or SSI, then you can put in money into an ABLE account as well, right? Doesn't mean you can only put up till the age of 26, but as long as you were diagnosed prior to the age of 26, you may have an older adult who's 45 who's been getting SSI this whole time that now somebody wants to start contributing to, and you can still do that for that family member. So the question is ADD considered a disability? And the answer would be if it is diagnosed by a medical professional, yes. So the question is, when can a child receive SSI? And that depends. So it depends up until the age of 18. It's dependent on your income and your family household income. If you qualify for Medicaid, then they might qualify also for SSI income. If they are at 18, it becomes whatever the child makes or has is what qualifies them for Social Security income.
A question was asked, if my child is ADD and does not qualify for county board services, could they still qualify for an ABLE Act account?
So there's county DD services, right? So the services that are provided when you're registered with the DD board, right? That has different qualifications compared to registering for the ABLE Act or registering for SSI and Medicaid. Okay, so as long as you have a diagnosis and you have it medically recorded, right, that you have that diagnosis, then for SSI, Medicaid, and for the ABLE Act, you're 99% likely to be able to get those things as long as you qualify from a needs perspective. Okay, if you can work, so this is where it gets fishy, is if you can work even though there's ADD, an ADD diagnosis, then your SSI might be decreased based off of the amount of income that would come into the household, right? Okay. The amount of SSI that a child typically gets when they're 18 years old is around $730 a month, okay? And that's in today's world. That could change next year, it could change next month, it just depends. And that is very dependent on A, the need for the child. So they might qualify from a diagnosis standpoint, but if they have no needs or they're working, then SSI, Social Security, can still come back and say, well, we're only going to give you $400 because it doesn't look like you need $700 a month for any services, therapies, or anything like that. So when we're working and strategizing, we're talking about housing costs, how to do that when you have a child that's living with you. So that's a little bit of a different topic, which we can talk about maybe towards the end if we have more questions. Child support does count as household income into your household. So that will play a role in regards to when you fill out the sheet. They'll say, what are all the income sources that come into your household? And then from that, they determine if your child is under the age of 18, whether your child will get Social Security income or not. So kind of getting back then to who is eligible. Again, you have to have a specific diagnosis prior to the age of 26. SSI income really starts to play a more of a role for majority of families at the age of 18. And then at 18, that's when you're qualifying or you're signing up for Social Security. A side note would be, as I always say, to call Social Security 3 times, get 3 different people, and get the same answer twice. Right? Yeah. Because we've had too many families say, well, I talked to somebody last week and they said that we don't qualify, and then 2 weeks later they call somebody else and they say we do qualify. So I always say get the same answer twice from 3 different people and from a Social Security perspective. Okay. Good questions, though.
A parent asked, is there any benefit from delaying from registering for SSI at 18 versus 21?
Nope, it doesn't work like Social Security and retirement, where you get this bump. It's whatever it is at that time. So anybody can contribute to an ABLE account. So it is just like a 529 plan, again, like a college account. So parents can contribute, the individual themselves can contribute, grandparents, aunts, uncles, they can all contribute, and it's just whoever contributes can only contribute the only thing is that you can only contribute up to $14,000 total into that account for gifting, for like the gifting tax.
Per person?
You know, total amount into the fund. Okay.
Per year.
Alright. So it's per year, and that can change each year based off of what that gift exclusion is. All right, so if the ABLE account distributions do not exceed the designated beneficiary's qualified disability expenses, none of the distribution is included as income. And so all that means is, as long as you are staying within the parameters of what your expenses are supposed to be used for from the ABLE account, and that would be housing, that would be transportation, that would be employment needs, that would be any therapies or anything that will help that adult. And it's pretty broad, so I would say you could probably make almost anything something that child needs. So for instance, we have families that come in where the child loves to go to baseball games, right? So they could actually use some of those funds from the ABLE account to pay for some of those, because that would be a social or experience that they might have, especially if we're linking it to a day that's a sensory day or something like that. So we want to try to find the different events that kids and adults can go to that would make sense from payment from an ABLE account to different kinds of events that they could be going to that are out there for all the adults, right? If, though, for some reason you have an event that you say, you know what, if you are the parent and you've been putting money into these funds, and then all of a sudden you say, I need to take money out for my retirement, or I need to take money out for me because whatever reason, if you do that, you're going to get penalized for doing that. All right, so you'll have a 10% penalty on anything that you have coming out, and it could be taxed. So the limitations will go. You can put up to $100,000 into the ABLE account, not a year, but up $14,000 a year. It can get up to $100,000. When it hits $100,000, then they will suspend the SSI payments. All right, so it's a give and take model. It's giving the adult an opportunity to have something in their name and benefits in their name, but then at the same time, they're saying we are going to cap you at $100,000 before we suspend you from SSI. Once you start to pay down or you start to use those funds, then you could go back and reapply and requalify for SSI at that time. Okay. You can have, I believe, up to $250,000 total into the account, though. Right. So a lot of questions that come to me today are, well, why would I do a special needs trust, which we might talk about a little bit later, compared to doing an ABLE account? So a trust, for those of you who don't know, is a state document or a legal entity that allows typically funds at the end of life to flow in for the child's needs that is seen as its own entity. Right? So if I have a life insurance policy or I have retirement, or I've just said, like, if I pass away, I want all my assets to go to the child, then you might set up a special needs trust that says that this trust has money in it for the benefit of the child or the adult, all right, and that those are to be used for special needs costs, medical costs, things like that. But there's no cap on $100,000, so it still doesn't kick them off with Social Security if money goes into the trust. But there's no cap on the trust either. So I always say with the caveat, if you are a family that knows you're going to have assets that are flowing to the child that exceed $100,000, you probably don't want to set up the ABLE account alone just for that purpose. You probably need a combination thereof of something. Okay. Any questions on that?
A parent said, why would I even want an ABLE account at all?
I see the ABLE account as families who have excess income that they just want to put a little bit in for the child to have extra money, and that child or adult can then use that for whatever functions they need, housing, things like that. Or they have an adult that is working that wants to earn more than $2,000 a year and have some place to put it. All right, I really see it for that. I also know that if you only have $25,000 flowing to the child, you probably don't need a special needs trust. But if you have a lot of assets that you know will be flowing to the child, you probably want a combination or just one or the other.
I heard that you can deduct $2,000 from your taxes if you put money into an ABLE account. Is that true?
If you have $2,000, you can deduct that from your taxes, or grandparents can do the same. So if they put $2,000 into the ABLE account, they can do the same. And that's not the same from state to state. So if you have somebody that's in Arizona, don't say, hey, I heard you could do this, because it is state mandated in regards to what is deductible from those different pieces.
That's only for Ohio, huh?
Only for Ohio. For five. No, so the trust, the question was, what's the difference between the trust and the ABLE account? The question arose because the ABLE account allows you to put up to $100,000 in before they will suspend somebody that's already on SSI. Okay, so qualified expenses, so if you use the money for qualified expenses of education, housing, transportation, employment training and support, technology, personal support services, health, prevention and wellness, financial management, administrative expenses, legal fees, oversight and monitoring, funeral and burial expenses. So all those things are encompassed in regards to what it could be used for. So like I said, it kind of says, hey, we're trying to give you some free rein here, but what it's not able to be used for is the parents to take it out to use it for themselves, right? Because a lot of times the parents will still have some access to these accounts or will be managing these accounts for their children.
Was there a cap on withdrawals annually?
No.
No cap?
So the only thing that are not considered for eligibility are treatments are not considered in determining eligibility for means-tested federal-based programs or the amount of the benefits under the programs. So the ABLE account does differ from special needs trusts in that the special needs trust monies typically are not able to come out to use specifically for housing expenses. So if you go and you purchase a house or you go and have residential housing, you're typically not supposed to be taking money from your trust to pay for those housing expenses. The ABLE account actually will allow you to do that. Okay. Again, if it exceeds $100,000 in excess, then you will be suspended from SSI. So what happened was, it took a long time, because you're probably thinking, well, 2014, why did it take Ohio so long to get their game together in 2016? So in 2014, our firm knew that these were happening, and then from 2014 to 2016, we kept saying, we don't have any information yet, we don't have any information. And then finally, last year, right around May, April, May, they started to come out with more information on it. And then last year, in October, they actually put up the website to be able to go and start to fund your own ABLE account. But it's all mandated by the state of Ohio. And so what happens is you can't really go to your broker or your investment advisor and say, hey, open me up a stable account or an ABLE account. They would just tell you to go to the stable account website, which we'll go to. Because it's all mandated, Ohio picks what banks they work with, Ohio picks who the investments are through and what kind of investments are available for the ABLE Act account. The ABLE Act allows you guys to have all these different pieces and parts, but again, allows your child or adult more so to have funds in their name to be able to use for all their different expenses and needs. Okay. It sounds very complicated just in regards to the rules and regulations, but I think if you really utilize it in the way of, hey, this isn't something for me to leave my legacy to, right? But it is something that if we want to leave some money to up to $100,000, you can definitely do that without suspending them from Social Security. It allows them to be working and having earned income that allows them to have over the $2,000. And it just allows a little bit more flexibility, because I do have a lot of adults who have special needs who are able to have some functionality in regards to managing finances, even with some help with parents or whoever it might be, or guardians. Right. So the ABLE Act is a great place to go. And the account website, which I don't have on here, is called stableaccounts.com. So let's see if we can get on that website real quick. And we'll just walk through it real quick. Oh, there's Josh Mandel. All right, so when you go, if you decide that you would like to do something like this or you just want more information about it, you would go to stableaccount.com, all right? And they have a lot of great information. So the stable accounts, the benefits, the eligibility, and the qualified expenses. So a lot of the information that we just went through. Whoa. So they use the typical Vanguard accounts that they use for the 529 plans. And they give you different options for investments. So you can take your money, put your money into the stable account, and you can either put it into different risk tolerance types investments. So you can have a growth option, which would be the Vanguard Lifestyle Growth Fund. So this is gonna be more of an aggressive fund. So what that means is a little bit more upside potential if the market's going up, but also the risk for some downside potential if the market is going down. They have a moderate fund, so this is typically part bonds and part stocks, which allows you to leverage. If the market goes up 20%, you're probably only going to go up 10%. If the market goes down 20%, you're probably only going to lose around 10%. So it's more of that moderate mid-range compared to the growth model. And then the conservative option, obviously, is going to be more conservative in nature, which means that if the market is going up, you'll have some upside potential, but not as much as 20%. So in a conservative model, if market just went up 20%, then you might get 4 or 5% within that model, depending on what it's invested in at that time. Okay? But again, if market goes down, you have less risk in regards to where you're at. So if you have somebody that you're starting an ABLE account fairly young, and you know that they're going to have a long life cycle or like long lifespan, then you might want to be in more of an aggressive model or more moderate model. It just depends. That's all philosophical, and it's all based off of what your goals are. But that's why they give you the different options. Because people say, well, why do they even give us options? Why wouldn't we just put it in savings and make sure that it's there for our kids? But some families have different goals for what they want their funds to do. All right, and then finally, they have an income option, as well as a bank safe option. And so the bank safe option is going to be more like your typical savings money market account. Okay. And so when you actually log in and you go through and open an account, you'll pick at that time what you want it to be, and you can change it if you decide later that you don't want to be in that kind of allocation later on.
What fees are associated with this?
Good question. So for anyone that's in the state of Ohio, so you can actually contribute $426,000, not $250,000. They had something in here. So it's $2.50 a month to have the account if you are in the state of Ohio. And then depending on, it doesn't say, so depending on what investment you choose will depend on the fees for that investment account that are associated with that mutual fund. So it can range from 0.19 to 0.35. Good question. So the Medicaid recapture piece means that whatever funds are in there after that child passes away, if they've received Medicaid care through that lifetime as well, whatever they have used from Medicaid, they will have to pay back from their account to Medicaid. Okay, so it is a Medicaid payback kind of account. So there's Medicaid payback special needs trusts, and now this is also a Medicaid payback account. If you never used any kind of Medicaid care, then whatever is in that account would not have to go back to Medicaid, but most families are on Medicaid and SSI when using these types of accounts. So whatever they have put in, whatever the system has paid into them, they will owe back from whatever is here. So if they have $20,000 left in their account, Medicaid just takes that $20,000 back.
I don't know what's
the catch, though. There is a catch, which is, again, I forget who asked about the special needs trust. Why would we do this versus a special needs trust? Which is why, again, you wouldn't want to put $450,000 in here, have the child pass away, and then owe, you know, part of that or all of that back to Medicaid. Insurance, health care, anything like hospital, medical, any benefits that Medicaid has paid for them.
So they're going to come back and take all that?
Only from these types of accounts, right? So there's only
from a trust.
From a special needs first party trust that is a Medicaid payback trust. So there are many different kinds of trusts, which is a completely different talk, but a Medicaid payback trust is if the adult or child has a trust in their own name, then they are beneficiary and trustee of, then when they actually pass away, that will go back to the state of Ohio, or back to Medicaid, sorry. Most people, if you know there's going to be assets, will set up a third party trust where the parent or grandparent or whomever it is owns that trust. The beneficiary then would be the child or adult with special needs, and as soon as that parent passes, it automatically causes a special needs trust to be there and open up, and the special needs trust then gets funded so that that child or adult does not get kicked out of Social Security benefits. And then there's a trustee who is typically an aunt, an uncle, a friend, or a corporate trustee, even a banker on another account, can be the trustee to help divvy out funds for that adult with special needs.
Right?
So again, that goes back to the rationale of, this is not something that I would say, hey, don't do it because it's a Medicaid payback, But if you want to save some money, but you don't want to pay for a special needs trust right now, or if you just want your child to be able to work and do some things that will get them over that $2,000, then the ABLE Act is a great vehicle for that. But it's not a great vehicle for putting, I would say, large sums or assets of money into. So when you go in, you can open an account. Let's just see what this looks like. So you can register for online access. Let's see if what happens for Mobile now. Well, I don't want to create a password. But you would go through, you would have to go through all the eligibility accounts. So the eligibility account or the eligibility requirements, the beneficiary is entitled to Social Security income or has been diagnosed. They can have SSAs that are helping them. So the information that's needed when you open these accounts is you need your beneficiary contact information, so that the beneficiary would be the child or the adult, okay, with special needs, their Social Security number, taxpayer number, and the date of birth, all right? And then any legal representative that you want to have on that account as well. Right, so that you typically would be the parent, and then the banking information to make the initial contribution to, so that's your bank withdrawing to go to the ABLE account.
A parent asked, what's the difference between a stable account and an ABLE account?
ABLE is the federal regulation that was made in December 2014 that said that states could then take these on if they wanted to and have the ability for families with special needs or adults with special needs to open these types of accounts. So from a federal level, they said, yeah, states, if you want to do it, go ahead. Then the states came through and then the states are going one by one saying, yes, we're going to do this or no, we're not going to do it. So they don't have to do it. What questions do you guys have, though, on any kind of ABLE accounts or planning or anything in general?
Okay, so the question is, what's the difference between like a 529 college plan, the ABLE Act, and then special needs trusts, right? So 529 plan is great because it allows you to put after-tax money, so money from your checking and savings account, into an investment account that will continue to grow for the benefit of that child. And then when they turn 18 and they want to go to college, then those funds need to be used specifically for an accredited college. All right, so it's typically for college savings. If they do not use it for college, then you can still take the money out, but again, any growth on it will get taxed, and then you may get penalized on that as well. Right? So when we're having conversations with clients, a lot of clients will say, well, I want to make sure we pay for every penny of our child's education. And so for that, I want to make sure that I'm maximizing the ability to put money away, have money grow, and then be there for my child at 18. I have other clients that come in and say, I struggled and got student loans. They will do the same. So I will put what I can in, and if I need to, I'll get some later, but I'm not going to put all my money into it. So it still has the same rules as you can only put $14,000 in a year. Grandparents can put in, aunts and uncles, whoever wants to put into those accounts can. All right. But again, because if you have a child with special needs, because they are the beneficiary, that is an asset in their name because they will get those assets for college. So the nice thing about that is that if you have other children that you know will need the benefit more, you can change the beneficiary to the other children, or you can change it to nieces or nephews or whoever might have some kind of family tie to you. Okay. The ABLE Act is specific for an adult or child with special needs, right? So it won't kick them out of SSI as a typical 529 college plan would, because they won't see that as income asset to that child until $100,000 is in that account. And then the special needs trust is just a legal entity. Typically, we're not putting funds in and taking funds out during the lifetime of the parents for that special needs trust, because typically it's the parents that would set the special needs trust up to say, when we pass, we want assets to flow into the trust to make sure that that child does not get kicked out of Social Security benefits, and that the funds within that special needs trust are used specifically for that child. And the reason you do that is because if you have, so we see all different kinds of stories. So one is, a lot of families come in and say, hey, we have Susie who is doing really well in school, and we have Kyle, and we think he, you know, he's been diagnosed with ADHD or autism, whatever it might be. We love them both equally, but we know that he is going to need a lot more care when he turns 18. If something happens, we have choices. We can bet that Susie is going to take care of him if he needs it, right? We can bet that Susie's going to take care of him, get married, and that the family household will never get divorced, and that all the assets that we leave to Susie and to Kyle will be okay, or to Susie, because we don't want to kick Kyle out of Social Security, so nothing's going to Kyle, so we can bank on that. Or we can have all of our funds flow to a special needs trust, which says funds are specifically set aside for Kyle, and then we also have funds over here that are for Susie. If Susie wants to take care of him, great. If Susie gets married and divorced, these are still protected, but these are subject to marital divorce or whatever it might be. Or if Susie gets sued, she doesn't have all of the assets from the family. It's only her asset. The trust is really holding that asset for Kyle and his special needs.
A parent asked, what's the difference between SSI and Social Security? I just don't understand.
No, I know it gets really confusing. So there are three different types, well, there's many, but I think the three most common are Social Security income. So that's a diagnosis prior to the age of 26. So that's autism, all the different disorders that children typically are diagnosed with. SSDI is typically you've paid into the system, which is where we pay Social Security from our paychecks. If we become disabled, SSDI is what pays us from that system. All right, and then what was the last one? So we have SSI, and then Social Security is just what you pay into from your paycheck, and then when you retire, that's what's there to help pay for your income. And that Social Security, from that standpoint, pays for either SSDI or just Social Security. SSI, you can qualify for prior to the age of 18 if your household income is less than poverty or Medicaid levels. At the age of 18, doesn't matter if your household is making $250,000, $350,000 coming in, if that child has no assets in their name or cannot have assets in their name, then they will still qualify for Social Security income. Does that make sense? It's really confusing, I know, because there's so many different pieces. Ultimately, if I were to go back and like just put it in verbatim, one sentence, why was the stable account really made? It was so that adults with disabilities who want to work and earn more than 12 cents an hour can do so, right? And we can do it outside of the work programs or whatever, but if they want to earn more than $2,000 a year, they can do it.